Episode 61, Your Fittest Future Self with Kathleen Trotter. I'm Keith MacArthur, and this is my instruction manual. Thanks for joining me on this journey. My instruction manual is a place where together we can learn how to be happier and healthier, have amazing relationships, and achieve our biggest goals and wildest dreams. In this episode, fitness is about more than just exercise, according to this week's guest. We talked to personal trainer Kathleen Trotter about her new book, Your Fittest Future Self.
The healthier you eat, the more energy you're going to have. The more energy you have, the more likely you're going to get to the gym. The more likely you get to the gym, then you're like, oh, I did so well today. So then you're, you know, probably more likely to then go for a walk, or you feel more fit. So then when the snow falls, you're going to shovel snow, which makes you feel even more fit.
Thank you so much for joining me. If you're a regular listener, this week's guest needs no introduction. As my instruction manual's regular fitness contributor, Kathleen has been on the podcast more than a dozen times, discussing everything from rest and recovery in episode 56 to packing a travel gym in your suitcase in episode 34. But with a brand new book out, I thought it would be great to have Kathleen join us for a longer discussion. Your Fittest Future Self, Making Choices for a Happier, Healthier, Fitter Future You, was released in early 2019. Kathleen is a personal trainer based in my hometown of Toronto, Canada. She has a master's degree in exercise science, and she's also the author of 2016's Finding Your Fit, a compassionate trainer's guide to making fitness a lifelong habit. Let's bring her in. Kathleen, we usually only get to hear from you for a few minutes at a time, so it's great to be able to have a longer chat. Welcome back to my instruction manual.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, and I always love chatting with you. We were talking before we started about we're sort of simpatico, our health and wellness philosophy, so it's great. Your energy is always very positive.
Oh, well, thank you. Yours too. So your first fitness book, Finding Your Fit, included some nutrition advice, but it mostly focused on the exercise side of fitness. But in the new book, you kind of lay out a framework where exercise is just one of three pillars. So can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that is the truth, that health has these three pillars. You have to move more, you have to sort of eat more nutritionally dense foods. And then the third pillar is the mindset. And I have to say that that's the sort of pillar I'm grooving on right now the most because, you know, to quote Derek Sivers, or to paraphrase him anyway, you know, if knowledge was enough, we would all be billionaires with washboard abs. Like most of us know really, you know, mostly what healthy choices are. You know, we know that we should walk more, get more steps. We know we should do some strength training. You know, we know that we should eat more vegetables, drink more water. But knowing and doing are so very different. So what I really wanted to do with the book is highlight two things. One, that the recipe for any of the mixes, so I call them the workout mix, the nutrition mix, and the mindset mix, is very much has to be created and has to be unique. Something that it's unique to you. So I wanted to really highlight that. And then I wanted to highlight the fact that you can't just focus on the workout and then feel that you're going to be, or the nutrition pillar and think that you're then going to be successful. Like in order to implement that knowledge, no matter how appropriate the knowledge is, and no matter how individualized the knowledge is, and no matter how scientifically proven the knowledge is and all that stuff, unless you can find the inner dialogue, the self-talk, that positive, productive talk to connect the dots between wanting and doing, you're never actually going to do the workout. You're never going to, you know, make the healthy food. So, all three pillars are really, really key and they feed into each other, right? Like the healthier you eat, the more energy you're going to have, the more energy you have, the more likely you're going to get to the gym. The more likely you get to the gym, then you're like, oh, I did so well today. So then you're, you know, probably more likely to then go for a walk or you feel more fit. So then when the snow falls, you're going to actually do, you know, you're going to shovel snow, which makes you feel even more fit, or you're going to carry your own groceries, or you're going to, you know, like do all the things during your daily life that are active. And
that exercise will also improve our mindset. I know that it makes me feel better that I'm more likely to want to do other good things.
Yeah, they're so connected. I'm very open in all my interviews about the fact that I really feel that I was sort of born very wired depressed, like, and I'm sort of always fighting a little bit of an uphill battle. And I can't tell you how important it is for me to do my daily motion. Like, it doesn't have to be a run, although I love running, but even just going for a walk and listening to a podcast and just moving, you know, if I wake up in a low mood, that is so key. So when you say exercise is connected to mood, it's so critical. And again, it fits into that cycle of, like, you know, you exercise, you feel better. If you feel better, you're more likely to make healthy choices. And so it's all three are really so vital and so important. And then, you know, the nutrition you eat also impacts your immune health. It impacts your digestive health. It impacts how strong your bones are. Like, you know, you can't really look at one pillar without looking at the other two. And you also can't really look at any of the pillars until you embrace the fact that the pillars have to be tailored to you, right? Like, the best workout that you never do, the benefits are moot, right? You know, one of my favorite sayings is the mediocre workout you do consistently is so much more important than the perfect quote unquote workout that you never do. And I think that's such the problem with, you know, people. They pick up the newest fitness book and it's like, oh, this is the best workout. This is amazing. I'm going to do this for a month and I'm going to have 6-pack abs, blah, 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 blah. And then they can't make themselves do the workout. So, you know, they never see the results, but because they don't do it, and they don't do it because the workout is so not connected to anything that they love to do, or that their lifestyle or their goals or anything realistic to them.
Yeah. And that makes me think of something else too, that it's not just, you know, that the newest fitness routine or whatever. It's also, like, in my own mind, sometimes I feel like, oh, if I'm going to go to the gym, I have to do more than I did yesterday. Like, I feel like I always have to keep doing more. And sometimes you don't have to, right? Just going and doing something, as you say, it's better than doing nothing.
Oh, for sure. Especially if you look at your workout as a mood boosting. So there are a lot of days where the purpose of my workout is not the physical purpose. I mean, sure, sweating is great and it's all good for my health, but really the purpose is the mood boost. So, you know, it's all about your goals and your fit. And that's one of the first chapter of the book is actually dedicated to understanding that before you start any fitness journey, you have to decide what your version of fit is, because so many people start, you know, their fitness journey with this very unrealistic, but also not a unique, or I don't know what the word is. It's like it's not born to them. It's not out of their own, like, who they are, you know, like they have this image of somebody from a magazine, or maybe who they were 30 years ago, or it's not authentic. That's the word I'm using. Like, it's just, it's divorced from them as a human being. So, you know, it doesn't, you have to stay in your own, like, you have to thrive in your own lane, like, have goals and work and accomplish things. And I, you know, I'm not saying sort of quote unquote, be lazy and just be okay with whatever you do, but I'm saying sort of, yeah, thrive in your own lane. Like, don't compare yourself to, you know, what your favorite celebrity does, or your father or your mother, or, as I said, the person you were 30 years ago, right? Like, your version of fit has to be your version of fit. And then those goals inspire the workouts. So, you know, you might decide the next 3 months is the 3 months you want to get really fit to play hockey. So then those 3 months, yeah, you're going to be banging out of the gym and getting balance and getting, you know, multi-dimensional motion so you can move on the ice. Or you might decide that you've been really active for the last 6 months. Like, maybe you've been training for a marathon or an Ironman, or maybe your sport is soccer and you come to the end of the season and you're exhausted. So maybe you decide that for the next month, your goal is actually like recovery. So Pilates, yoga, walking. I think that with anything, there's such a yin yang, like there's a balance. So if you work really hard at the gym for a period of time, then you need your recovery. So that could be, you know, every third day is a recovery workout. That could be sort of every 6 months, you have more of a couple weeks. You know, that periodization of cycling through different types of workouts is really important. And just understanding that rest is really key. Like, rest is when your body and your brain recover, and rest doesn't have to be sitting on the sofa. You know, sleep is wonderful as well. So I'm a huge fan of sleep, but rest can also be those workouts where you're going for a walk. It's active recovery, where you're doing Pilates, where you're doing yoga, you know, so it all fits together.
When you came up with the three pillars, did you debate what order to put them in? I know you've got mindset third, but does it really all start with mindset?
Oh, I love your question. Well, I do have it third, but I also don't have it third. I know that sounds like I'm such a politician sometimes when I answer questions. Because although I have the workout mix first, there are chapters that preface, like come before the workout mix. So I really talk in the introduction, for example, about the importance of, you know, having a growth mindset, the importance of self-talk, productive self-talk, the importance of understanding your inner dialogue, the importance of self-compassion. So that's really laid out in the introduction. And a lot of the sort of main tenets of the book, which is, you know, one of them that is the Kathleen learning cycle, that everything is very cyclical. So you try something and then if it works, great. If it doesn't, you try something else. Like you try, you learn, you analyze what you learned, and then you put that learning into the next time you act. So all of that is mindset stuff. And that first chapter where I really focus on what is your fit? That's very much mindset as well, because, you know, it's about asking the right questions and it's about understanding yourself. And you can't really understand yourself or ask the right questions if you're not delving into what your thoughts are, which is basically what your mindset is, right? It's like looking at what are your automatic thoughts and learning to sort of take a pause and objectively look at your life. So you don't just live with your impulses and just sort of go from moment to moment. But you actually are like, oh, do I really want to have that cookie? Do I really want to miss that workout? And then only through that awareness can you develop the mindset that works for you. So, yeah, I sort of feel like I do a lot of mindset in the first introduction and the first chapter.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
In the workout mix section, you have another group of three. You talk about three pillars, and we've talked about these in another episode, but I think it's worth mentioning them again here. So, cardio, strength and flexibility or stretching and mobility, as you call it.
Well, what's interesting about those three pillars is it sort of connects back to what we were just talking about, is that it's all about balance. So, you know, if I get a client who comes in and all he or she has been doing for the last like 10 years is yoga, then I'm like, okay, you've been biasing your workouts a lot towards that. So let's start to incorporate the strength and cardio. You know, I will have people come in who are like endurance athletes and all they've been doing is running. I'm like, okay, well, let's start to work in some strength training and some flexibility work. So it's this delicate balance of seeing what somebody's been doing and thus what they obviously they love because they've been doing it, and keeping enough of that, because, you know, I look at myself, for example, and I love running. It's my bliss. But because I love running so much, I then can use that as my mindset of why, my rationale of why I then have to do strength training and stretch, because I will say to myself, okay, Kathleen, like you don't want to do these squats and lunges, single leg deadlifts, all that stuff, but you have to get strong enough to be able to run injury free, right? Like you don't want to use only running in shape. You want to get in shape to run. So that what I love about that chapter in the book is it breaks down sort of the benefits of those three pillars and why you need all three, and then helps you figure out what you've been biasing for the last sort of 5 to 10, 30 years, and then how you might just sort of tweak it a little bit. So you can sort of find that unique balance of doing what you love, but doing enough of the other things that you can continue doing what you love for the rest of your life, right? So again, I'll look at sort of me compared to my dad. Like I strength train so I can run for the rest of my life. He loves hockey. And I know as he gets older, he finds that the multi-directional stuff, he's quite stiff and his ankles are not quite as strong. So he strength trains to get stronger for that sport. And he sort of tailors his strength training workout based on the stuff that's going to help him for hockey. So, you know, or my mom, she loves to garden and she loves yoga. So, you know, she does when, you know, we put together her strength workout, it's very much to make her sort of mobile enough to be able to like get down and off the ground for gardening and to reach without hurting her back. And so it's all based on the stuff that she loves, but it still incorporates all three pillars. That makes any sense, because they really do, again, it all feeds into each other, right? Like if you're really, really mobile but not strong, then you're going to continually injure yourself from being too mobile. And then if you're really, really strong and not mobile, then, you know, you might be fine lifting a box, but when you turn your head, when you're driving, you're going to crank at your neck. So there's sort of positives and negatives with all forms of exercise, just with all forms of life. So it's understanding like the positives that work for you and the negatives that don't, you know, that you don't, they let you, that you can let go of, you know?
Yeah. And you've also got some practical workout routines in there. Like if someone wants to get up to running a 5K or wants to do a triathlon, that's all in there, which is great. They can really get, you know, those practical tips as well.
I tend to really like to talk about sort of the big umbrella concepts, the philosophies, and mm-hmm. Which is great, but I also want people to be able to read the book and be like, okay, so now I understand the principles and how do I put the principles into practice? And I think that I think, you know, just give myself a little bit of pat in the back. I think we do a good job with the book of balancing that. Like I hope people leave understanding why they should or shouldn't do things and then also how to implement that knowledge, which is really key.
I think so. And so we get to talk regularly about fitness. So I want to spend a little more time on the other two categories. Cool. And about nutrition, one of the things that you talk about in there is the replacement effect, and that it's not just about cutting things out of our diet. We have to consciously think about what we're replacing those things with.
Yeah, well, and that goes with sort of another theme in the book, which is just finding your joy or finding your kiwi. So I'll quickly tell where the kiwi term comes from. Mm-hmm. I was basically talking to a client, this is years ago, and we were trying to find the things that she could replace her sort of less than great habits with. And she was really frustrated because she was a mom of four. And she was like, well, I buy this food for this kid and this food for my husband and this and this. And I was like, what do you like? Like, what's a healthy food that you like? Because she was feeling very overwhelmed, which is an unfortunate feeling that a lot of people have with health and fitness, but also just that she was depriving herself of all of the things that she, quote, loved and didn't have anything of joy anymore. And I was like, well, what healthy food do you love? I was like, do you like raspberries? Do you like, you know, do you like big salads? Do you like, because there's lots of really healthy foods that are so yummy, big stews. And she couldn't figure out. And finally she came in when, like, Kathleen, I know, I love kiwis. So now the kiwi is this metaphor of something healthy right. that you actually truly like. And I think that's really key, right? Is like you have to, well, you don't have to do anything, but like I suggest that you find things and health that you love. So it's not like, oh, I can't go out, you know, with my friends and drink. It's like, oh, I get to go with my friends and like go do a walk, or I get to go and go to a Pilates class, or, you know, oh, I can't have X food. It's like, oh, I get to have this other food. So if you can find things you like, and then you can embrace that you're sort of owning that choice. And then, you know, not sort of simply taking away one sort of less than healthy food and just then replacing it with another less than healthy food because, you know, as I said, you're feeling deprived. So you're like, well, I don't get to have my cookies, but I'm going to have my chocolate protein bar. And then that has, you know, 35 grams of sugar or whatever. Like, you know, it's all about the important thing to realize about nutrition is that the most important thing is that with awareness brings choice. So whatever you're doing, you have to be aware of what you're doing. And that's the key, is like most nutrition programs that work, one of the reasons they work is this makes you aware of what you're putting in your mouth. So you know, oh, I had a cookie. Well, I'm not just going to have five. I'm going to stop at one. Or, you know, I know that my trigger foods are chocolate almonds. I'm speaking personally for myself. So I don't have chocolate almonds in my house, right? So it's all just about being aware of what you put in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have your own, instead of this, eat this list in the book. Obviously it's going to be different for everyone, but one of the recommendations you have is for people, instead of eating regular pizza, to eat egg pizza.
Oh yeah. I love my egg pizzas. Yeah. But you have a lot of substitutions in there. It's like, if you want to eat pasta, you could do like a zucchini pasta or a bean pasta or a spaghetti squash pasta. I make these like protein popsicles instead of having fudgicles, because fudgicles are like one of my downfalls. You know, instead of putting sugar in your coffee, you can put cinnamon. So there's lots of different ones. But the egg one is fun because, especially if you have a family, like everyone can put whatever toppings they want on the egg. Like it's basically just the egg is an ability to sort of load it up with whatever. So I love salsa. I put lots of salsa on it. I put spinach. But, you know, if you were somebody who were into cheese, you know, have some cheese. So you can kind of make it your own. And if you do live with a bunch of different people, everybody can, you know, personalize it a little bit. But again, like,
so how is it different from an omelet? Is it an omelet basically?
Well, no, it's not all mixed in, right? So you bake the egg, so the egg becomes, I wouldn't say hard, but it's like hard-ish. Then you put the stuff on top of it. So that's why it's a pizza. And then you sort of eat it with a knife and fork. So, I mean, I guess it's almost more like a frittata, but again, it's not a frittata because the food's not mixed in. Like, it really is on top. So I actually often, I make it like a pizza. So I bake the egg and then I'll put like salsa on top, and then I might put like some spinach on top. And then, you know, if there's a protein I'm going to have, then I add that on top, and then I put it back in the oven for a couple of minutes just so that stuff sort of softens.
Got it. Okay. Because we're talking about nutrition and you and I are both in Toronto, one of the things I've been meaning to talk about in the podcast is the new Canadian food guide. Cause I think it's, you know, although most or many listeners are not in Canada, it really is interesting to know about it because the government in their recommendations has kind of gone from the four food groups that we see in a lot of countries down to just three, where they've merged, you know, all protein. So meat and dairy and meat substitutes, it's all one category now. The recommending that half of everything we eat should be fruits and vegetables. They've gone from, you know, a kind of general grain and cereal group to saying that it has to be whole grains, and like white Wonder Bread, you know, doesn't count as a serving of grain anymore. They're also saying that fruit juice is no longer part of the fruit and vegetable category. We should avoid it and think of it more as a sugary treat rather than really something healthy for us. So there's some pretty big changes. What do you think about those?
Well, I'm looking at it online right now as we speak, and I just love all of the color. I just think that's so wonderful. And I think that, you know, if people get anything from looking at it visually, is that, you know, the more color you can eat, the better. I feel like it represents my feeling of health, that it's just about eating nutritionally dense foods, right? Like, that's so critical. So many of us eat so many processed foods. And I think from analyzing so many different nutritional programs and diets for the book, because what the book does in the nutrition program or the nutrition part is that I break down something like 30 different diets, like the pros and the cons of each of them. So I really got to look at all of them. And across the board, the programs that I really connected with just really stress awareness, and they stress nutritionally dense stuff. So, you know, if you're going to get that from broccoli or cauliflower, or if you're going to do it with, if you can digest dairy, go for it. If you can digest meat, go for it. If you want to have it from tofu, go for it. But, you know, it's important to be aware. It's important to care about portions. And I think, you know, that's the other thing I really like about the Canada Food Guide, is you can see, like, as you said, half of it should be fresh fruits and vegetables. Like, there's so many people, when I do food journals, you know, they eat like one, two at the most servings of vegetables and fruit a day, right? So if you can take your diet and literally all you do is cut out processed foods and you add in lots of nutritionally dense foods, particularly fresh fruits and vegetables, you will be killing it. Like, that is such a big change for almost anybody.
Yeah. And you know what? The one piece of advice that I would add is, like, I think for some people, you don't even necessarily need to think about cutting out the processed foods. If you just think about adding way more fruits and vegetables, then there just won't be as much room for the processed foods.
And you're full, right? Like, fruits and vegetables are very filling. So then you don't have as much room. Absolutely. And I love their connection to water and pointing out the fruit juice thing, because that's one of the things that a lot of people, they think they're making really healthy choices, and they come in with their food journals, and I see it all the time, and they're getting so many extra calories from what they're drinking, you know, from alcohol, from sugary juices. And they'll be like, oh, look, I got, you know, my five servings of fresh fruits and vegetables, and three of them were fruit juice, you know, and there's no fiber in the food. And it does really impact, you know, your blood sugar. And so, you know, I always say to people, you know, as opposed to having orange juice, just have the orange, as opposed to having apples, apple juice.
Have some water and an orange. Yeah.
Fiber. Exactly. You get the fiber, you're going to feel more full. So I do really like that about the new food guide. And hopefully it'll inspire people to sort of do a little bit of research and be what I call the informed consumer, right? Because if you look at it and you see, oh, interesting, there's no just dairy category. So, okay, so what did I know that dairy was good for? Oh, it's good for calcium. Okay, so that must mean that I can get calcium other places, right? And then they can do some research and see how much calcium like broccoli has, right? Like there's so many fresh fruits and vegetables that have calcium in them. Or they say like, oh, interesting, you know, there's nuts in the protein section. Okay, that's cool. Okay, so what? How much protein does a nut have versus an egg versus tofu, right? So I hope that the food guide as well as my book does encourage people to sort of be like, you know, my body is really key and it's not a garbage can. So I don't want to put garbage food into it. And, people spend hours on Wikipedia reading about, you know, people who've been dead for years and cars and video games. And, you know, if you took 1/10 of that time, and put it to understand things that are going into your own body, like how much better would you feel, right? Like it's amazing the amount, you know, people spend time on so many things. And I'm not arguing those things aren't important. Like, sure, research the car you're going to buy, research the stocks you're going to, you know, buy, all that stuff. But like, you're literally putting this stuff into your body. And the food that you put into your body is then it creates your neurotransmitters and your hormones. It impacts your mood. You know, if you constantly feel like you're getting sick at work, you're probably not eating well. If you constantly wake up in the morning and you're tired, you're probably not eating well, right? So anyway, I hope, you know, anybody listening to this podcast, if they get anything, sort of think about how important their health is and what an investment it is. And, you know, with just a little bit of time, they could learn enough to make a big difference.
No, that's so true. And you know, just from my own personal experience, until I really tried to start cutting back on sugar, I didn't realize how much of an impact sugar was having on my moods. And now when I have sugar, I can really feel how my brain changes.
Yeah. Well, and sugar is a great example of how the three pillars work together, right? Because if you're not sleeping, which would be in the sort of recovery section of the workout portion, right? Then, you know, your body and your brain's not recovery. Your hormones are going to be all off. So you're going to crave more sugar. Then you wake up in the morning, you're craving sugar, you're tired, you're going to have more coffee, you're going to put sugar in the coffee, which is then going to spiral into needing more sugar throughout the day. Because once you have sugar, it creates more of a desire for sugar. If you're sort of hopped up on coffee, you're less likely to have those nutritionally dense foods. Nutritionally dense foods like protein helps you stay satiated and helps you say no to sugar, right? So it all works together. If you're eating well, you're going to feel like you need the nutritionally dense food to help your body recover. So, you know, it all connects. And in order to make yourself get to bed on time so you sleep well, that's part of the mindset mix, right? So it's all, because so much of mindset is that being, you know, stepping back and being objective and saying, you know, when it's 10 o'clock at night and you're like, oh, you know, I want to stay up and watch a movie or a video game or whatever, to say like, no, my future self will be happier if I go to bed now, right? Like you kind of just have to be an adult, you have to parent yourself. But it all works together because if you're not eating well, you're not going to have the energy to sort of take that pause. You're going to be super hungry and reach for the sugar. And then the more sugar you reach for, the more sugar you reach for, and then the more sugar you reach for, the less likely you're going to be able to go to sleep at night. And then you're going to reach for more sugar and, you know, so it all feeds.
Yeah. And I love some of the advice. This is getting into the next section about mindset while still talking about food is you have some advice for mindful eating. And so for example, you recommend that people don't do anything else while they're eating, that they're not watching TV or walking or driving, that eating should be what you're doing when you're eating and the only thing you're doing.
Well, it's another reason, or for so many reasons, you want to just be concentrated on it because one, mindless eating, you just eat so many extra calories, right? Like I have so many people, like parents, and they snack while they make food for their family, and then they basically eat an entire meal, and then they sit down and they eat a second meal, right? So for them, I say no snacking while you're cooking, maybe have a piece of gum, that kind of thing. Then I have lots of people who eat, you know, 2, 3, 4 meals because they're sitting in front of the TV. So they're distracted. So they're not aware of what they're eating. But I also have, you know, people walk by their coworker's desk and grab some almonds. And it's amazing when I get people to make food journals that most people really underestimate the unhealthy choices that they make and really overestimate the healthy choices they make. You know, before they make the write the food journal, they'll say, oh, Kathleen, I mainly eat really healthy. And, you know, I don't snack a lot. And I go to the gym 5 days a week. And what we realize after the journal is that those are more aspirational goals. Like that's sort of what they want to do. But what they actually do is very different. So journaling.
And I bet their behavior when they're journaling is even better than it was before.
That's totally, totally fair. So it's even worse. They're not joining for sure. I think the other reason why sitting and enjoying the meal is really important is it goes back to what we already talked about, is that a lot of people look at health and fitness as sort of almost like a punishment. It's they feel like overwhelmed and they feel like, oh, I have to eat well. And, you know, I'm depriving myself of so many things. And if you can make eating in itself a pleasurable occasion, like savoring your food, being there with your friends and family, then being healthy can be something that you're doing for yourself because you love yourself and it's not a punishment. And you're much less likely to rebel and go back to your old habits if it's something that you're doing for yourself. Like a lot of people will say to me, oh, you're so disciplined, you're so motivated. I'm like, well, I mean, sure, I've built discipline into my life. Like I have a lot of structures that set myself up for success. But more, it's just that I've embraced the mindset that this is a privilege. Like eating well is a privilege, exercising is a privilege, and it's a privilege I'm doing for myself. And it's a choice I'm making as an adult. So it's not like, oh, I have to work out. Like, you know, there's nobody making me work out. It's not like, you know, my mother or my doctor or, you know, some godlike figure is wagging their finger and being like, Kathleen, you got to do this. It's me saying like, Kathleen, get your ass on the treadmill. Like you'll feel better after. And when it's you telling yourself that you should do something because it's good for you and your future self will be happier and you own that choice versus feeling like it's some external source making you do something, you're much less likely to rebel. It helps me stay on my horse to feel like I'm kind of owning it and enjoying it and finding ways to keep me healthy and happy. It makes me proud. It's not something, I'm not a 5-year-old being told to go to bed. I'm a like 30, almost 36-year-old saying like, Kathleen, like be smart.
Right. Right. Well, thank you for sharing so much wisdom with us about all the different forms of fitness. Now, I'm hoping we can squeeze a little more wisdom out of you. So as you know, the podcast is my instruction manual. And so I want to ask you about your own personal instruction manual, the Kathleen Trotter Recipe for Success. Now, on an earlier segment, I already asked you the basic 5 questions that I ask my featured guests. Mm-hmm. But now I'm starting to have featured guests back for a second time. So I've developed a new series of questions and want to ask you those. Are you ready? Kathleen. Kathleen, if you had to pick one music album as the soundtrack to your life, what would it be?
So I don't listen to a lot of music. When I'm running, I listen to a lot of podcasts. But that said, I would say that I have 2 answers because I never can just give one answer, as you know about me. So I would say that the most nostalgic sort of album for my life is anything Britney Spears. My best friend Emily, who is actually the inspiration for this book. So quick side note, we were sitting having a pedicure and she always asked me questions like, oh, should I do intermittent fasting? Should I do this? What's good with, you know, is Pilates good? Is Greek good? And, you know, every time she would ask me a question, I would say, well, you know, this is the pros, this is the cons, you know, maybe do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like I never just had a like, yes, it's good or yes, it's bad. And I would say, you know, maybe your recipe is, you know, Legree once a week and running once a week. And she looked at me and she's like, that's your next book. And I was like, what's my next book? She's like, well, the idea that there's no perfect program, it's that you have to figure out the mix that works for you. And you have to pick the pros from all the different information out there that apply to you and put them together into your own sort of unique recipe. So she was the inspiration, and she's also the inspiration for the sort of soundtrack of my life. So we went to high school together. So we've been friends since grade like 9. And I've gone to every single Britney Spears concert that ever has been in Toronto and Hamilton with her. And we actually went to Amazing. Vegas. So I don't know if I listen to Britney Spears now as an adult, I would still like her. But, you know, listening back to all of her stuff, she reminds me of a lot of fun times in my youth and just sort of joy and fun. I would say my current sort of song, it's not a soundtrack, but I can play it for you. It's whenever I'm feeling like I need a little bit of a pump me up. Like this morning I was on breakfast television and, you know, I just was feeling like I'd done a run and I just sort of did my makeup and I was just about to leave my the house. And I was like, I need like a little influx of energy. And so this is, it's Fight Song by Rachel Platten, I think is how you say her name. I don't know if you know this song, but it's like, it's basically like, this is my fight song. I will do it. Like it's a really,
motivating.
Yeah. So anyways, everybody at home should absolutely listen. It's Fight Song. Yeah, Rachel, I think you pronounce it Platten, P-L-A-T-T-E-N. I don't know if I like any of her other songs. I just really like that song. Because it's extremely motivating. And if you're feeling like your gremlins, you know, or your inner critics telling you that you like, you can't do something or you're not strong enough, then it's like, listen to that song and you're like, I can, you know, I got this. I can do it.
What's one personal development myth you want to dispel?
That you're either, well, oh, there's so many, but I think, I'm like, I don't know. I could go on for hours. So I think the myth that I would go with is that you're either sort of striving or you're happy. So this idea that, you know, you're either kind of complacent and happy with who you are, or you're the person who strives for something more. And I think so much of health is built on false dichotomy, right? It's like the false dichotomy of either you're fit or you're not, or either you're doing the perfect workout or you're not, or either you're eating healthy or you're not. And everything exists on a continuum. And, you know, as I said earlier in this episode, like it's better to do 10 minutes of workout than 0 minutes of working out. Something is always better than nothing. So the dichotomy of either I do like the perfect hour long workout or I do nothing, you know, it just sets you up for failure because it's like, well, I can't do an hour, so I might as well do nothing. So the false dichotomy that I'm personally wrestling with now is this idea that, you know, you're either striving to be a fitter future you, a healthier, you know, you, or you're sort of happy in the moment. And I really actually think that that's very, very untrue. I think that we are all this constant state of becoming. And I think that, you know, you only become a fitter future version of you through the moments that you're in. And I think that life is a development, right? And like, if I was 80 and I was the same person as I was at 35, I'd be extremely unhappy. So in order to be a different version of Kathleen at 85, and I don't even, it's not that it's better. It's just, it is the evolution of Kathleen. I have to be evolving. So I don't think it's this like, you know, either I'm happy now or, you know, I'm working to something else. I think that you can be very present in the moment and you can appreciate your moments and you can live the now while also really embracing the fact that like the what you do now is what creates the you of five years from now.
Yeah, I can really relate to that. I think it's so important, actually. It's something that I've been thinking about too, because I think if you look at kind of traditional self-help books, they're all more in the like, you need to keep pushing harder, you need to do more and be better. And like, but lately there's a bit of a, I don't know, there's another category of books. It's more about feeling better in the moment and more focused on mindfulness and that kind of thing. And so I think that's something that I think about a lot too, and kind of struggle with that, you know, you can be striving and content at the same time.
Yeah, well, because you can be content with where you are. I look at it like I have an educational model of life, meaning if you were in grade five and working on grade five math and you aced grade five math, you'd be like, yes, that's amazing. But that doesn't mean you wouldn't also want to get to grade six math and grade seven math and grade eight math, right? But it's relative to where you are in your sort of educational process. So if you think of your health and your growth as a human being as this sort of educational process now without a graduation date, right? But it just keeps going. But if you look at it that way, like I can say to myself, for where I am in this moment, I'm so happy and I'm so grateful and I'm all of those sort of mindful things. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't want to be a different version of Kathleen in 5 years because as I said, like if I'm the same version of me in 5 years, like I'll be pretty bored with myself.
Yeah. What's an unusual or surprising gadget you couldn't live without?
I don't know if it's unusual or surprising. Well, I'm going to give two because I can't give one of anything. So the one that I was just given for Christmas that I absolutely love, it's not unusual, but I do love it, is my wireless headphones, because I struggle with the fact that I absolutely love my parents, but they're really into the phone. And I think my generation is less so into the phone. So, you know, my dad lives in Montreal and he always wants to talk to me, and it's has been in the past a struggle. So now what I do is if I'm walking around, you know, or even if he just wants to talk, like I will put my wireless headphones on and I'll just go for a walk, because it's hard for me to just like sit and do nothing but talk on the phone. But then if I'm sort of doing chores in the house, then I'm not present with the phone call. So I've gotten really into going for walks and sort of talking with the people who I care about in my life. And, you know, if I have to go to the grocery store and it's half an hour away, I phone my mom so she feels loved, you know, in her sort of way, because she loves the phone. So that's made a really big difference. And even just like, I live and work in the same space. Like I have a studio in my home. So every night I have to clean the studio. I have to put stuff away. So, you know, I put my wireless headphones in and then I can listen to a podcast as I'm sort of moving things around. So I love, I can go from room to room and I don't have to have my phone. So I love that.
Nice.
More unusual, but very, very important is all of my slippers. So I have this slipper collection. I'm completely
really
yeah. So you can actually see, if you go on my website, there's a photo of me sitting on my sofa with a Christmas mug, because I'm also completely obsessed with Christmas, and these seal slippers. So the slipper obsession started when my partner James brought me home. He was traveling for work, these seal slippers from Vancouver. He probably brought them home for me like 15 years ago. I've been with him since high school. And I just love them. Like, they're just massive slippers. So now every birthday and Christmas, he tries to like beat the slippers that he's bought me before. So I have Santa slippers, like massive Santa slippers. I have fox slippers. I have bunny slippers. I just have all these really, really fun slippers. And, you know, it goes with what we were talking about before of sort of changing your state. And it's something that will, if I'm feeling low, putting on a pair of slippers and sort of thinking about how much I love James, and how much he loves me, and just finding this sort of goofy in life really helps me. So yeah, the worse my mood, the more likely you'll see me in my goofy slippers.
Nice. Okay. What does a bad day look like to you? And what are the steps you take to turn it around?
So bad days have really changed for me over the years. I mean, like everything in life, it's such an evolution, and I try to learn from the bad days so then they happen slightly less intensely. So the sort of norms of a bad day has changed. Like I think back to when I was a teenager and very depressed, and it wouldn't be a bad day. It would be a bad week or a bad month. Like I remember staying home from school for like 3-4 days at a time because I was just so depressed. You know, I would obviously lie and say I was sick, and my mom probably was like, what the hell's going on? But I was just like, you know, I remember my friend in grade school, and she would call it, I was having an episode. And I don't have those anymore. I mean, I have episodes still, but they're like more like hourly or momentary, right? So partly because I'm better at appreciating what's going to set me off and sort of I call it like the pit. So I know when I'm 5 or 6 steps away from the pit, what I can do to sort of stop me from fully falling in. So the falls are less intense. They're not 3 or 4 days. When I do fall, they're more like, you know, 1 or 2 hours. I go there less often because I'm like, oh, if I wake up in a bad mood, I know that's the day I need to go for a run. That's the day I need to listen to podcasts. Like I love like audiobooks and podcasts. And that's the day I need to, you know, phone a friend, make a date to go for coffee with somebody, do, you know, a good Pilates workout, put on my slippers, put on that fight song we talked about earlier.
Nice.
So I kind of know what to do to stop it. But at the same time, I'm also pretty good at, like, if it happens, I'm like, right, falls and bad days are an inherent part of life. Like you can't always be, you know, peppy and happy go lucky. So I have more compassion with myself when I have them. And, I try really hard to sort of talk to myself in the way that I would talk to a client. Like if a client came in and said, you know, I ate 5 cookies and, you know, I don't know when I missed my workout, I wouldn't say to them like, oh, you're a terrible person, which is how you want to talk to yourself when you have a bad day.
Yeah.
I would say to them like, okay, so you're human. You know, you fell off your horse. Let's discuss what this, like why you fell. Like, did you fall because you were sad? Did you fall because you were lonely? Did you fall because you were tired? Did you fall because you let yourself get too hungry? Do we need to pack you a healthy snack? Like, what were the motivational things that happened before the fall? So it's a really big part of my most recent book is this growth mindset. Like, you act and then you analyze the act and then you try to implement strategies that will change the course of the life, so the act doesn't happen again, or if it does, it's less intense. So I definitely apply that model for my bad days. I'm really open about this. It's in my book. Like, I'm in therapy. Like, I don't go to therapy the way I used to go to therapy. Now I go sort of once every 4 to 6 weeks. But, I do really believe I was wired to be depressed, and it's hard work. But what's better work to do, right? Like, than learning about myself and figuring things out. And my norms have just really changed, and I'm hoping that as my life progresses, my norms will continue to change and I will have even fewer bad days.
Well, that's great. That's a good way to look at it. Finally, Kathleen, you've got two books out. You've already accomplished so many amazing things, but looking forward, what's your biggest goal or dream?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, you asked me before what my biggest problem with the fitness discourse was. And I said this sort of dichotomy between striving and being happy. And I think that, you know, I could give you my professional goals. I would die to meet Tim Ferriss, or I love like Chase Jordan is really great, or like Brené Brown. If I could meet and talk to her, mm-hmm. Oh my God, like, you know, work with her in some way, that would be amazing. Those are sort of my like big goals. But I also would love, I'm trying to get more into motivational speaking. So I'm hoping when you talk to me, you know, in 2 or 3 years, I can say that that's a part of my regular weekly work life. I'd like to decrease the amount of client hours. Like, I do personal training client hours, so I'm not working till sort of 9:30 at night and do it. And instead of working till 9:30 at night, do, you know, sort of one or two motivational talks a week. So that's, so professionally, gradually moving to more motivation, less personal training, and definitely working with some of the people that I respect so much would be unbelievable. But personally, finding that ability to be in the moment and have joy, like, I've gotten much, much, much better at it. And I really credit James for helping me with that. But, I don't know who I was listening to the other day, but some mindfulness podcast, and he was saying, you know, the biggest freedom in life is being free from anxiety. And if I could master that ability to sort of be in the moment, be present, have absolute joy, and, you know, say goodbye to my sort of inner critic gremlin, so I had a little bit less anxiety, that would be amazing.
Those are great. Well, Kathleen, thank you so much for speaking with me today. Where can people follow and connect with you?
My website is kathleentrotter.com. So definitely get hold of me there. Email me through my website. I love talking to people. I really do. So if you have any questions, please reach out. I'm K Trotter Fitness on Twitter, Kathleen Trotter Fitness on Instagram, and then Kathleen Trotter on Facebook. And I'm on all of the platforms, and on any of them, if you reach out, I will be more than pleased. I would be honored to answer your questions.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So that's episode 61. I want to thank this week's guest, Kathleen Trotter. I also want to thank our other regular contributors, Joel Anderson and Michelle J. Lynn. If you want to support this podcast, please make sure you buy a copy of Winning Resolutions in ebook or paperback from Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, and Barnes & Noble. Or support your local bookstore. If they don't have it in stock, they should be able to order a copy for you. Now, go make today a great day. New episodes of My Instruction Manual are released every Monday. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else great podcasts are found. You'll find complete show notes on every episode at myinstructionmanual.com. That's also where you can find more content about how to be a better you and download some great free resources. If you know someone else who needs a guidebook for life, please let them know about My Instruction Manual. And I'd be so grateful if you took a minute to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. You can reach me at keith@myinstructionmanual.com. You can also reach out on Twitter, where I'm at Keith MacArthur. And you can find My Instruction Manual on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and YouTube.